Peter, I'm reading your book, Inside My Pencil, and at the end of the foreword, I love what you say, and I'll read here. I do what I do, I write what I write, teach who and what I teach, because I've learned that a classroom is more than just a classroom. A classroom is a trampoline. It is a frying pan. It is a trap door to the sublime, a rabbit hole to the eternal. That's just wonderful.
Wow, yeah, that sounds pretty good, the way you read it.
When somebody else reads it.
yeah. No, that was quite lovely. I might ask you to read that again.
So, and another thing, that this book is about you teaching in the Detroit public schools and also as a part of the Inside Out Literary Arts Project. One of the things you say in here that intrigued me, have you really carried the same pencil in your pocket since third grade?
That's the story that I tell, and with every story that I tell, I believe that there is some truth to it. But yes, there is a pencil that I do carry with me in any teaching situation that I'm placed, mm-hmm. and it certainly does look like it's a pencil that I've been carrying around for many years, and there is much truth to that. Whether or not it's the same pencil I've had since I was a third grader writing my first poem, I'll let our listeners figure that out.
Is your preferred writing tool in general a pencil, or are you a pencil man?
It really depends. I mean, I think that writing by hand, there's something very pure and organic about that. And certainly, you know, in the teaching situations that I find myself, that's the reality of, you know, most of the kids don't have their laptops. And even when I teach college, I mean, the kids sort of pull out their notebooks and they start scribbling words. And it really depends on what I'm working on, whether or not I'm going to be, you know, typing away on my laptop or using pen, pencil. You know, for my book, We Make Mud, I wrote that book on a typewriter. Mm. And it just had a feel to it that I think only an old electric typewriter can really bring to it. You know, I wrote a novel called Bob that I wrote completely on the laptop. It just had a different, a different sort of language to it, a different kind of pace to it. Inside My Pencil was a book that I, you know, I scribbled notes for it often, you know, as I was leaving the buildings where I was teaching or sitting in my car, and then I would come back to the computer and try to capture what I remember of that space.
You know, that's interesting when you talk about that. It makes me think about when I get down to some creative writing, which can be very different than business writing, I have to have a certain kind of a pen, and I have to have a certain mm-hmm. kind of a notebook, and nothing else will mm-hmm. do. It's funny yeah. how that works.
Yeah. Jim Harrison, who's a great, you know, Michigan poet and mm-hmm. even beyond the region, who, you know, sadly recently died, and, you know, he's a poet I carry with me, you know, almost everywhere I go, like that pencil. Mm-hmm. I think he's known for saying, you know, like in terms of advice to writers, you know, he wrote with a blue pen on yellow, mm-hmm. you know, notebook paper, and that worked for him, you know, and any teacher is going to tell you, you know, in terms of what they're trying to teach you, hey, this worked for me. This sort of unlocked, you know, my own creativity, my own imagination, and whether or not it's, you know, writing with an old pencil that supposedly you've been carrying around with you since third grade, or writing on a typewriter, a manual typewriter, or just, you know, my little laptop or you see people these days writing on their phones, and I've even been guilty of doing that myself. But it does have a different feel to it. You can't deny that the pencil in the hand, there's something pure about that.
I think there's actually been some scientific studies that have said that writing by hand rather than on a keyboard, there's something about that connection between hand and brain that it taps into creativity better.
I think so. I mean, it slows the process down, which I think is something that poetry invites us all to be a participant in, a process of, you know, just sort of slowing down our own processes, which I think is really one of the key values of writing and reading poetry in general. We live in such a rush world, and yet the poem, whether or not it's the red wheelbarrow, you know, it's slows that one sentence of, you know, 14 words long, the way you read it, the way you see it on the page slows the process down. Yeah. You know, I like to wake up in the morning and, you know, the first thing I like to do if I can, if I've got the time, is to really just sort of begin my day by reading poetry. Mm-hmm. And it just, for that same reason, it just sort of, it locates me within myself. And that's the beautiful thing about reading. And then writing poetry is also pencil in hand and just sort of finding yourself at the tip of that pencil. And I hope that this book sort of speaks to that.
You've also said in this book that you want to be a writer, but you must teach.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that sort of playing with that, you know, Rilke's advice, you know, to the young poet, you know, unless you must feel the compulsion to write, maybe you don't need to do it. And as much as I want to say that I couldn't live without, you know, writing my own work, I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think I could be happy, you know, if I never wrote another book. I think I could be fine with that. Would I be happy had I not written the books that I've written? Maybe I wouldn't go so far as to say that. But there's something about teaching that when I walk into these schools, there's just something it speaks to the authenticity that's inside me. You know, even though I might create this persona of Mr. Pete that's sort of slightly different than maybe the Peter Marcus that other people might see me as, and I sometimes hear myself referring to myself often in the third person and even speaking about myself as if I'm an outsider to myself, looking at me, doing what I'm doing. When I go into these classrooms on the best of days, I know that that's what I was really born to do. And again, I think that's why I wrote this book. After writing, you know, mostly fiction all of my life, this was a time, you know, to tell a story as true as I could tell it, and to try to capture that truth about the things that I've been doing for the past 20-odd years.
What age groups do you teach, Peter?
You know, we teach K through 12 at Inside Out, and then, and really, you know, the youngest that I've ever been is second grade. For instance, this year I'm at a number of different schools where I'm teaching third graders, I'm teaching fifth graders, sixth graders, seventh, eighth. I'm also teaching at a high school. I teach two classes at Oakland University. So I'm teaching, you know, children, I'm teaching growing up children, young adults, and really my approach isn't all that different, you know, for all the whole gamut of those groups. Things that I do with my third graders, I would do the same thing with my university students. Oftentimes, in fact, I'll bring in a poem that a third grader has read and said, look at this, become that child again is the dare that I often say to my grown-up children. And I think that there's, you know, I mean, poetry is accessible to, I think, all ages. The one thing I haven't taught, the one population I've never taught, though I've always been interested in doing it, is, you know, just like older adults. You know, especially adults near the end is something that I've been intrigued by, the idea of possibly, you know, trying to do some sort of writing workshop in a nursing home. And
oh, I hope you do. That would be fascinating.
Yeah.
You talk about in one of your essays about caged brains, and I'm thinking as I listen to you, children, young children are probably the most free and uninhibited and can tap into creativity, I would think, easiest. And
absolutely,
then maybe senior citizens, at that point, it's like, you know, I don't care. I'm going to say what I want to say. Or maybe something like Alzheimer's, it might even help in that process, too. It's just let go and say what's in there.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks to a reality that I'm dealing with as the son of a father who's dealing with so many issues with, you know, dementia and, you know, watching that happen to him. So it's even, I mean, I'm not even sure if I'd at this point be able to go into a nursing home because it would be maybe too too much emotionally, but I think you're speaking a truth certainly about children at a certain age being completely unhinged or uncaged, and then all of a sudden, you know, they reach a point where, you know, the door on the cage has been locked. And again, that's my job, is to come in and say, you know, let's open that cage. Let's remember what it's like to, you know, be even that preschool child who, you know, if you think about how a child before school navigates the world, it's a completely free place where we're free to make mistakes. Even if we're crawling around on the floor and putting dirt into our mouth, we learn on our own that that doesn't taste very good. Or that child at the playground who doesn't need all that much to really entertain herself, you know, or himself. A twig that they find becomes, you know, this magically infused object that then, you know, they start telling stories. I mean, I watched my own children go through that before they entered school. The stories that my son used to narrate with his little action figures. It was beautiful storytelling in its purest form. And then we go to school, and most schools don't they don't really nurture that side of the child that, you know, wants to be creative, needs to be creative, the poet that's in every child that I think eventually, like you said, to use the caged brain metaphor, that bird is stuffed back inside the cage.
Yeah.
You know, and then the sad thing is when that bird never gets a chance to sing again. And I, you know, I run into that all the time with adult writers who, you know, they might end up coming back to the university, or I teach private online workshops. And how did you end up, you know, wanting to write again? And it's always the same story. Well, when I was a little girl, I used to love to write. And now I just spent the past 30 years writing nothing but memos or recipes or lists of things to do. And now I want to do something again for myself. And again, it speaks to that authentic side of ourselves that I think it's just very important for us to give voice to that.
Now, this whole book is a series of stories about teaching and about the young people that you come in touch with. But I wonder if there's a favorite success story or just a favorite fun story that you would like to share with our listeners here.
Oh, those are always tough questions to answer.
Well, you must have a zillion.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, how do you choose? It's like when I have the students choose a favorite line in a piece of writing that they do. And I love it when the most resilient, resistant student says, "But Mr. Pete, I like them all." And I'll say to them, well, sometimes we have to make those hard choices. Still, if you can, put a star next to your favorite one. And I'm just even remembering a child just, in fact, yesterday who, a little third grader down in River Rouge, who was just very insistent. He was not going to choose his favorite child, if you think of it like that. And he just kept, he said, every one of these lines is my favorite. And I sort of let it ride at that because I really appreciated him sticking to his guns, so to speak. But, you know, I've had, you know, children who just, you know, whether or not they're writing about very tough tragedies in their own lives, or, you know, who go to the other side and bring nothing but joy and light and hope to the poems. I've had students who, unbeknownst to me, are severe stutterers, and yet all of a sudden they stand up in front of a classroom and read a poem, and it's, you know, there's no stutter at all. It's like a musician blowing into his trumpet. So those are the kind of things that I hold on to. And just even, you know, little moments where I can just see a student who maybe is not the best student in the classroom, but there's something about poetry that he or she finds himself. And there, you all of a sudden you see a light sort of get flicked on inside them. And again, I'm just reaching to, when I was, the other day I was at a high school and I could just tell this kid was like, you know, I really love this.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't think that they didn't see themselves as poets. and yet they were open to it, which is all I ever ask of any classroom of students. Number one, be open. It might feel weird what I'm asking you to do, or you might not even, you know, feel like you're in the mood to try to do any work. And, you know, for many students, writing is not something that they find much pleasure in, you know, because there is some difficulty. There's a lot of stories where students just resist it because they've been told they're not very good at it, or they've learned that they aren't very good at it. And yet, in a poem, they find success, and through that success, they find that confidence that I think is crucial to, you know, any of us being successful in the world.
And there's a lot of healing in being able to write something down that you've experienced, too. I would think for a lot of kids, they might be able to find that.
I definitely agree with that. You know, whether or not it's a student dealing with, whether or not it's grief or happiness, I think just to find equal doses of both, I think, is incredibly important. And some students are better at doing it, you know, kind of going to one extreme than the other. But, you know, I always say that you can find yourself in the process of writing. You know, you sort of like, we write to discover. We don't really know what we know until we see what we find ourselves saying to that piece of paper. And then we discover, you know, that sort of hidden truth inside of us. And I hope that this book, you know, dramatizes some of that.
You teach so much to these kids. What have they taught you?
I've always said this, that, you know, I've been doing this for 20-odd years, and I think as much as I've had some great teachers over the years, me hearing myself give advice to students, it was a real eye-opener to me when all of a sudden I had to say to myself, hey, you got to listen to what you're preaching, you know, in terms of just being open.
Yeah.
You know, be imaginative. Anything is possible. You know, as an adult, we carry realism with us, around us, you know, like a sack of potatoes, right? Mm-hmm. And as a writer even, you know, I remember when I was in graduate school, I was just writing stories that I think anyone could write. They were just sort of, you know, realistic stories where I was certainly writing with somebody's, you know, someone else's pen, so to speak. And then I'm always daring students to, you know, like go somewhere that no one else has gone before. So even just taking a line of advice like that and saying, you got to apply that to your own page, buddy, or else you're just going to be treading in, you know, somebody else's tracks.
Oh, you have to be a role model too.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the kids just teach you how to be, also just kind, you know, I mean, that's especially in these days that we're living in right now. And, you know, one of the things that I think we can do is just sort of like be kind to each other, and teaching children. To me, what I always advise our writers whenever I talk to writers about what we do is, you know, number one, be cool to the kids, be kind. You know, they don't need someone coming in who's, you know, going to try to shut them down again. They just need you to, like, put them in a position to succeed, and they're going to succeed. Mm-hmm. Even if a kid's having a bad day, just, like, let them have a bad day and, like, say, hey, you know, put your head down for 5 minutes. That kind of little moment of kindness, I think, is going to let that kid 10 minutes down the road find the strength to lift his head and maybe pick up that pencil, and hopefully, even if he's expressing what's going on in terms of why he's having a bad day, or maybe even write his way out of it. You know, I think that's number one. That's my job more than anything else, is just to, you know, to teach with kindness. And through kindness, I think the children then feel the joy of writing.
Peter, there's been a lot of talk lately about public education in this country, and the value of public schools, or what some people would argue is not the value of public schools. I'm wondering, you know, with all of your experience, you're in there every day. What's the best thing we can do for our public schools, or what should we know about them?
Wow. I don't know how to even begin to answer that question. I mean, what I've been watching these past 20 years is just watching a shrinking public school system here in Detroit. I don't have the numbers that I can give you off the top of my head, but, you know, let's say in the past, since 1995, since I've been doing this, let's say there were 150 schools here in the city of Detroit. You know, I've got a printout somewhere here on my desk, and I could count you. And I know for a fact that there's under 100 schools left. You know, there's always these schools that are on the list of, you know, we're going to close you down next year unless you raise your test scores, which is nearly an impossibility.
Of an indication is that about a school's value, just looking at test scores? Because that's one of the things that gets debated, too.
Yeah, I mean, data is everything in terms of, in the eyes of some people who rarely walk into these schools. But, you know, the intelligence that I think I'm trying to address and that I hope this book is highlighting or showing a different kind of an intelligence can't be measured by data or by a standardized test. You know, talking to these students and listening to these students speak about their experience and about the things that they write about and find joy in and even write their way through experiences that for many are very difficult. To me, that is more of a North Star that I think we should be looking at, you know, other than how well somebody performs on these tests. That really, I mean, a lot of the schools are so pressured and so stressed out. I mean, that's really a word that I hear myself using to describe the teachers, the students, just the climate in many schools is that there's just a level of stress because of, you know, whether or not it's a curriculum that says all teachers must be on the same page at the same point in the week. There's very little flexibility for these teachers. And many of these teachers who are terrific, I can just tell you that, they went into teaching because they thought that they were going to, you know, build a classroom and build a world out of this classroom where the children would find joy in the process of learning, that there would be, you know, it would be a creative place. I think that's why most people go into teaching, you know, that they can leave a mark on their students, that they can be kind to their students. And I watch more and more really gifted teachers leave the vocation because they're just, you know, basically they're forced out. I've seen so many amazing teachers who are just get so tired of the whole process by which they're judged that they just, you know, they say, I'm done. You know, I'm going to find something else to do. So one thing that sort of kept me doing what I've been doing is that I sort of am on the outside of those kind of pressures. I get to come in as a visitor, as a guest, and, you know, no one asks really to measure the success of what I do through any kind of specific data. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I've had teachers tell me that, you know, certain, whether or not it's MEEP scores or M-STEP or whatever these recent tests are called, that they can point to, you know, an arc in how those levels do actually improve in classes where I've been a writer. And I can certainly see growth from the beginning of a residency and over the arc of toward the end. You know, you can just see a child become more fluent, more confident, which is the key.
Let's have you read an excerpt, because this is just a wonderful reading, and I would love our listeners to get a little taste of what your book, Inside My Pencil, has to say.
I'm just going to read from the very beginning, and it sort of addresses what you've already spoken to in terms of that must-ness that I feel when I need to teach. I write, I'm a writer, not just because I can, but because I want to write. I teach writing, though, because I must. It's where and when I am most pure to who I am and what I was born to do. I believe this to be true. Words have wings. That's a sentence I've heard myself and my colleagues say often here at Inside Out, the Writers in the Schools project that has put bread on my family's table and has fed more than just my body for the past 21 years. A workplace where I find solace and companionship with the other writers who call Inside Out home. In the classrooms that I call home, it is not uncommon to find children who believe that they can fly. Children who have dream hands that allow them to stand on their tippy toes and touch the moon. Then take the moon in their hands as if it is a baseball and toss it spinning across the sky. The children in these classrooms hold in their hands magic pencils that invite them to look inside, to look through the looking glass that the rubbery eraser at the end of any pencil can become. A looking in, a believing in, to see the physical words, the imaginary worlds that live at the tips of their fingers.
Thank you, Peter. That was wonderful. And thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Oh, anytime. It's a pleasure.